Meeting, it is Saturday, May 2nd, approximately 4:45 in the afternoon. Two bills up for consideration this afternoon. First of all, we will take up House Bill 452. We have Representative Joe Green and his trusty sidekick, Jeff. Whichever one of you want to come to the table, or both?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Jeff Logan. I'm a legislative assistant to Representative Joe Green. Mr. Chairman, would you like the detailed version or the summary?
We need what we need to know.
Mr. Chairman, HB 452 simply says that if you are a private nonprofit public benefit corporation, foreign or domestic, and you receive more than $5,000 in a calendar year from another corporation, you must tell the people of Alaska on a form provided by the department the name of the corporation from which you have received $5,000 aggregate dollars in the calendar year, the amount of the payments, and the purpose of the payments. And if you don't, the commissioner can dissolve your corporation or revoke your certificate of authority to conduct business.
And why would we want to do that?
Because, Mr. Chairman, there are large amounts of money illustrated by the information in your packet coming into the state targeted for participation in public policy decisions among Alaskans that are affecting the outcome of those processes, and we believe Alaskans should have the benefit of knowing where the money is coming from that is affecting decisions on their lives.
Okay, we do have quite the packet here. Do you want to maybe just walk us through an example, or and also, do you have an example of what the form, what information it would require or would look like, or you're leaving it up to the agency to design?
Mr. Chairman, I have discussed with the design of the form with the agency, and they believe it would be literally a couple of lines and a couple of boxes on a piece of paper.
Representative Kelly?
I don't know that this is what you're trying to get at, but I think it might be. I remember there was a knock on my door a couple of summers ago, and it was a young woman from Evergreen State in Oregon, and she was collecting signatures for a ballot proposition. And I quizzed her a little bit, and the group that she was hawking for was actually the Ralph Nader Group. And you would have just thought this was a concerned Alaska. If you had not asked, you would have just thought this was some concerned Alaskan out gathering signatures. But what they'd actually done is they'd gone to the Pacific Northwest, gotten college kids, pulled them up here, and they were trying to influence public policy in Alaska. I don't know if that's what you're trying to get at here, but it seems like it is. And if it is, I support it. If you want me to move the bill right now, I could.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Joe Green, that is the point, and the only problem is that if that doesn't fall within the $5,000 per year, they would not be covered. But should any kind of a poll that's going to be effective in influencing policy would probably exceed that amount. And that's exactly right. If it's a wolf giving money to a sheep to try and influence public policy, we want to know about the wolf and why.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Does this bill make a difference between charities and nonprofits? There's
Mr. Chairman,
two major different things here, and I don't mind nonprofit being qualified, but charities, whether it be homes for the wayward girls or whatever, kind of a different story. They got to live off of grants and different monies.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Martin, indeed it does. In the definition section of the bill, which I'm searching for now, we implement the definitions from the American Bar Association Model Nonprofit Corporations Code and list public benefit corporations and mutual benefit corporations as different organizations. Representative Martin, the type of organization that you describe would be more of a mutual benefit organization under the definition we have in the bill.
Page 3, line 28, you do nonprofit corporation may incorporate an exempt from federal taxation under 501c3, and that includes an awful lot of regular charities within the state. And on the other hand, your nonprofit organization, which do not fit under the IRS code, you may be missing. You can probably pick up a lot of those nonprofit organizations that don't fit under the IRS code with those who have gambling permits in this state. And that's where they keep, they all hide under the name of charity. In this case here, you're turning it around just the opposite. You're talking about nonprofits, which to me are just a distortion of the word. They make a lot of money. They make big monies, millions and millions in this state as well as around the nation, just because they don't make a profit, even though they pay their executives very, very high salaries, more than a profit organization could approve. So we may be causing more of a problem than we might want to, especially when the confidentiality here of codes, charitable organizations. There's a lot of people that give to charitable organizations that do not want to be known publicly. They give to true charitable organizations, not nonprofits.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Martin, that's a good point. That's why in the bill we have excluded individuals, and only corporations that give to other corporations are required to report.
Most anybody would be a corporation nowadays. Any two people, couldn't they?
But Representative Martin, I guess the people that are making the contributions, the individual that you're talking about specifically, is that like, you know, me sitting down at the end of the year and, you know, deciding my wife and I on what our charitable contributions are going to be? We're not a corporation, though.
Yeah. Basically, what you'd end up doing, people here, is just following your IRS statement, annual IRS statement with the state. If that's what you want to require, then.
Well, I think they're just specifically requiring, you know, certain over 5,000 from another corporation.
Yeah.
And it would say that's once a year, Jeff.
Yeah. Yes.
Each year by July 1st, and is that the same reporting date for the other? Other report.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Biannual. Okay. Yes. Representative Grusendorf, and then Kelly.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had a brief opportunity to crack my files here and take a look at it. Representative Green, you were talking about wolves and sheep and clothing and things. This is not an intensive game management thing, getting at wolves in the state of Alaska, is it? Mr. Chairman, I'm looking at the title here, and it says certain nonprofit corporations, and then very obviously this bill really is geared to the Judiciary Committee to take a look at it, and we're here concerned with the, you know, the fiscal notes on it. But at the same time, just thinking about the examples were used about petitions and things, and that brings me to thoughts on the First Amendment and the right of the citizens to partition, you know, the government on various issues. Right to petition is part of the, you know, freedom of speech and expression. And I know that would be true also with the state constitution as well. I guess I have to say these things because I don't have anything from the Judiciary Committee as to the minutes, as to the record of what transpired there and what legal aspects was handled in the Judiciary Committee. So I guess I'd have to ask you this: what would be the constitutional ramifications of going after certain nonprofit organizations and the right of the citizenry to petition, even though you and I may not particularly like what they're running around with the petition? Of course, some of these issues may indeed be national issues of which the United States Congress would be very interested in, which may be counter to what we may want in the state of Alaska as legislators. Lacking the minutes and any record of conversations and issues dealing with it, What am I to make of this? It appears from the what you have said and what other people on the committees have said, there are certain groups that you don't particularly like, and one person would sign this thing immediately. But where are we treading on the Constitution of the United States, the Constitution of the State of Alaska?
Well, Jeff will discuss where information is available. What we're asking for is information that is available. Unfortunately, it's not available in a timely fashion presently. There's a delay of 3 or 4 years, and what this bill would do is bring that information more readily available to the public now in the interest of public good, because what we've got is a situation where company or Corporation A is doing nonprofit work being funded by a corporation with a specific purpose that isn't made known or isn't available to be made known under current disclosure for several years because of the fact that it comes from federal IRS returns and things like that. It's not a matter that it's an invasion of their constitutional right of privacy. It's just a matter of getting the data in a timely fashion. By the time you would normally go through this, the issue is long past, and then you find out, oh, this was funded by A, B, and C, who are corporations that I don't particularly subscribe to, but I found it out much beyond the time that the issue was established.
Well, Mr. Chairman, you said the right to privacy, okay, fine, but I look at removal for grounds for dissolution of these corporations. I suppose one could talk about the right of association, right of assembly, right of corporation, and I'm just saying, what legal questions were brought out before the Judiciary Committee so that I can make some sense of this? I'd rather sit here and look at the fiscal notes and see what it's going to cost us and not sit here and do legal battle and ask questions which I hope would be presented to me so I could look at it, come up here and say, okay, I'll listen, and then vote one way or the other.
But well, I apologize for not having the notes from the Judiciary Committee. As you know, the minutes have a tendency to be backed up because of the lack of personnel. But
was there
discussion about this issue, yes, and it was held that it was not an invasion of privacy.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm saying this is serious. The right to privacy is another thing. That's in our Constitution, implied by the National Constitution, but we're getting right down to the right to petition, right to assemble, the right to associate with who you want, provided their behavior is within the law. And I want to know what discussion came of that, and then I will quit you.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Grusendorf, there was not, on your particular point, there was, I don't recall, much discussion, because I discussed it early on with the drafter, and she didn't see any problems relating to First Amendment rights with this bill whatsoever in any of its drafts, and it's gone from a much more narrowly crafted bill than it is now.
Well,
as far as requiring information from certain corporations, I have here the IRS Form 990-PF, which requests information only of private foundation or non-exempt charitable trusts treated as private foundations. The Paperwork Reduction Act tells us that the federal government figures this takes 140 hours a year of record keeping, 27 hours to learn about the law or the form, 32 hours to prepare the form, and 16 minutes to copy it and send it to the IRS. And we're not requiring anything near that. We're simply asking, if you go over a certain amount, to check a box, essentially.
Mr. Chairman, once again, lacking minutes on this and lacking an understanding of it, was there anybody who testified against this? Were there any groups that were concerned about this approach? Was there adequate public hearing? I have no idea. How many times did you hear this thing?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Grusendorf, the bill was heard twice in the Judiciary Committee. It was heard once, and the committee, we went about it a little bit different way than is presented to you now. The committee heard testimony and thought it might be better to go at it a different way. So we worked for probably another 3 weeks to a month on that bill. At the first hearing, the Division of Corporations testified, and suggested a different way to go. At the second hearing, after the committee staff had worked with corporations and the drafter, they appeared at the meeting but chose not to testify and subsequently had no objection to the bill as written.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't know who the drafter of this was, and I don't know who testified on behalf of it for or against, and that would be very helpful. In fact, Mr. Chairman, I might not even have to say anything, but being that I waited here for 3-4 hours for this bill and just opened it up, I just see all sorts of questions that I have on this.
Representative Kelly?
I'm not sure if this applies, but to enter the public policy debate that we do from these chairs, we go through far more disclosure than this. There's no question. And if you're concerned about the rights of assemblage and the right to petition, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, then I would hope to see from you a bill that completely gets rid of the campaign finance section of statute, because those are gross violations in comparison with these.
Mr. Chairman, that is not the question. It's just that I'm forced to ask these questions because I have no basis to look at this piece of legislation other than what my gut feelings tell me. And I just opened this folder 3 minutes before we got here, and I looked at it, and then I started thinking, wow. And I thought, well, maybe some of these things, and nothing. And this is the dangerous time of any session, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Martin.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I was wondering why we chose on line 14, page 2, here it is again, page 2, line 14 and 15, we're basically talking about those nonprofit corporations that are exempt from federal taxation, 501c3c. Now, that's the main one, charitable group, for what you really call educational charities, the Boys Club, the Holy Angels of Fairbanks, whatever. Those kind of things.
It's Holy Angels.
I'm trying to think of your school up there, Monroe Catholic. Yeah.
Oh, it's Immaculate Conception.
But anyway, most of your other nonprofit organizations, which I am really apt to get someday, I probably won't now, but who have pull tab permits, are qualified as nonprofit organizations, but they do not qualify under 501c3.
Sure.
And so the ones that you may be getting to, they may not want. Same way with political organizations. I'm not sure if we have 501c3, but under the category of 501s, you have A, B, C, D, and then you have subunits of those. They go all the way up to G, F. I think they stop at F. And then some of those have subunits under those for charities and nonprofit organizations. Many of the nonprofit organizations we have in this state qualify not whatsoever for federal charitable organizations, and they don't want to, but they do qualify on Alaska as nonprofits, and they do get grants and things of that nature. So you may be including, and I think it's going to be expensive because this means all these groups that haven't been following reports with the state for a while, because they do file a report now with 50C, may now have to go to the expense of filing it. It won't be nothing but the zero, but the Bureau here will have to store it in some place. We'll have to do whatever we want. And I really think, I'm surprised we limited it to this, Jeff, just a 501c3. Am I reading that wrong?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Martin, that is the definition of a nonprofit, but those are not the only corporations. Not all 501c3s will have to file the form developed by the department. That's why we go through the on page 3, line 4, and define what a public benefit corporation is. I think that there's some confusion. On the previous page, page 3, line 26, we define a mutual benefit corporation. And although we may not be all that familiar with these phrases, they're well-established doctrines in our body of law. A mutual benefit corporation might be, for example, a country club that organized for the benefit of its members, a booster club at a school, maybe a scientific organization that doesn't have a public purpose. They just want to meet and be left alone and not have to pay the amount of taxes that a for-profit corporation does. I would think that a number of the organizations you have mentioned would be mutual benefit corporations. And neither one of these definitions, by the way, include churches. They're a totally different breed of cat, so to speak. They're a religious organization and found that are a different part of the code.
Mm-hmm. But right now, we're limiting it to 501c3s?
Yes.
The way I say
yes.
It.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Representative Martin, no. On page...
Are you working for version H, Jeff?
Yes. On page 3 at line 13. Line 14, let me take you there. In addition to the binary report filed, a public benefit corporation. So all we're talking about is public benefit corporations. A public benefit corporation that is a domestic corporation or a foreign corporation. So that means if their articles of incorporation are filed with our Division of Corporations here or with the Secretary of State in another state, they both are included. If a public benefit corporation is transacting business in the state and has received an aggregate of $5,000 or more during the calendar year, then they have to file this report. So it's only those public benefit corporations. And then when you go over to page four, line four, it defines what a public benefit corporation is. And a public benefit corporation means a nonprofit corporation that is not a mutual benefit organization, blah, blah, blah. The way Ms. Bannister has drafted this, she includes what a mutual benefit corporation is before what a public benefit corporation is. I'm sure she had a good reason to do that, but I can't tell the committee what it is. But
Jeff, who you indicated that when you came back to your second judiciary meeting, Division of Banking and Securities testified that they were neutral?
Mr. Chairman, they chose not to testify.
Okay, who was your contact in dealing with the bill?
The representative of that division, of Corporation Securities.
Who was it?
Mike
Monagle?
Yes, Monagle.
Mr. Chairman, what about the Department of Revenue? You know, they're the ones that does all this. Were they invited to talk to the Department of Revenue? They're the one that has all the codes and all.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Martin, the information that would be required in HB 452 would be handled by the Division of Corporations in the Department of Commerce. And that was the agency I was directed to, and they confirmed that they did have authority over this type of activity, and they're the ones who participated in the first hearing and who I worked with after that first hearing to craft this language.
Representative Mulder, did you have a question?
I did, but I think you got an answer, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Also, Jeff, what was your discussion with regards to the fiscal impact? It's my understanding there was some discussion of a mailing. Is it,
Mr. Chairman, the
decision to send it out on page 3, line 23 and 24, talk about it may be included as part of the biannual report.
Right.
Do they do a mailing on a yearly basis in prep for the biannual report?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. As I understand it, they break the number of nonprofit corporations in the state up into two and do... half of them get a mailing 1 year and half of them get a mailing the next year, so they do two-year reports. They indicated that they would have to notify people that the law had been enacted. Attached a fiscal note, sorry. Mr. Chairman, it's actually a $7.5 million note, but I think they meant $7,500. I hope it's a typo. Mr. Chairman, we did some calculations of our own and determined that in order to send a three-page letter to all of the corporate nonprofits in the state, and the prices I'm listing here are from our supply office here in the Capitol. That would take $81 worth of paper for a three-page letter. The envelopes would be $188.10. And I confirm that these are the prices from Capital Office Supply that the Department of Commerce gets. And then the postage at 19 cents a piece would be $903.64 for a total of $1,172.74 for three pieces of paper, the envelope, and the postage. And so we questioned the fiscal note to the Judiciary Committee, and the committee voted to zero out the fiscal note and send the bill on to the Finance Committee.
Was that part of the motion to pass the bill? Was on that?
Was in the passing of the bill that it would be a coming to zero fiscal note.
Okay. Are there further questions? Mr. Chairman, Representative Martin.
I do this to my friend, but I really think if the Department of Revenue had the chance to look this over, that we may get quite a bit of a different story of what they say who's going to have to qualify. I understand the Division of Banking and Security have a certain list of nonprofits and so on. But because we're using the code number we're using on the IRS, it's extensive. And the list that we have here is basically the greenie groups, but that's small compared to all the nonprofit organizations that might fit the criteria that they have here in the bill.
Jeff, what is the total count on the 501c3s? Do you know?
Mr. Chairman, the state does not had not indicated to us they break them down that way. They have filed with the division 4,756 nonprofits. Some are 501c1, some are c2, some are c3s, on up. Some are educational groups, scientific foundations, mutual benefit, public benefit, you know, churches, various affiliations. But total number of all nonprofits was 4,756.
Representative Kelly?
No.
Representative Corey?
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, could I, one additional point. The department also anticipates that 10% of that number, or about 500 organizations, would have to file under the bill.
10%.
About 500 is the number they have stated, yeah.
Because they receive this type of money?
Because they fit the qualification of being a public benefit corporation and would receive, you know, this type of
So you, I forgot what you said your mailing cost would be. Your mailing was to all 5,000 roughly, of which basically 10% would.
I used that 5,000 number because that's what they use for the purposes of their note.
Representative Corey.
You can help me with this answer here to this question here, but I'm just struggling in my mind as to the need for the legislation. Is there any kind of harm being done to the public right now that this is trying to correct? That would be my question, Chris.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Coring, in your packet there is information about large amounts of cash flowing into the state of Alaska from outside private nonprofit foundations. There was testimony in the first hearing in Judiciary, for example, from residents of Ketchikan, who knew that there were people outside of the state who were active on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C., who were active in other forums that weren't quite so public, that were trying to alter the status of their economy. But they didn't ever know who it was. They testified in support of the bill, two gentlemen from Ketchikan, so that at least when their town was being torn apart, their economy was being ruined, at least they would know who it was that was doing it to them. There, Mr. Chairman, we also had testimony from other individuals here in Alaska who told the Judiciary Committee that this is a pretty common occurrence. I point to the information in your packet. The letter of support from the Alaska Miners Association has quite an in-depth article from their last newsletter showing recent amounts of money coming in against certain mining activities from foundations outside that some of the information we end up getting after a lengthy period of time and maybe after the policy action that they're trying to impact has already been taken.
Mr. Chairman, this is a follow-up. But thanks a lot. That really does help, Jeff. I frankly didn't have a chance to go through the packet as the same situation has been. And the rest of us here, I'm sure there's so many bills that we've been dealing with. That does help. However, I maintain a concern as far as government oversight of the private sector, be it nonprofits or charitable organizations. I know that the intent of some of these is not necessarily a good one, at least in our minds, as far as funding, say, environmentalist movements or whatever, and it could be an impediment to our economy. But I look at it from a overall free market perspective as far as answering the question, should government restrict the private sector or not? So I'm just struggling with that one a little bit, too.
This is not restricting them at all. This is only making that which is available. Well, it's public information being made available more timely.
I know. That's kind of what I meant. Not restriction per se, but to the extent where it's requiring that they report, disclose, you know, their financial activities, essentially.
That's already a matter of public record. That's disclosed anyway. It's just that it's disclosed in this state more timely.
Representative Kelly, did you?
Yeah, I was just going to respond to what Representative Coring said, and that one thing that I look at it this way is the people in this state that provide the jobs and that develop the resources that provide the state with the money to provide troopers and schools and, you know, welfare money and all the things that help us live here. Those companies are regulated to the nth degree, and many times they're regulated because of incredible influence that outside environmental groups put on the federal government and the state government to increase those regulations. And those companies, they have to hire people just to keep up with environmental regulations or OSHA regulations and on and on and on ad nauseum. These people operate unrestricted. And not only do they operate unrestricted, they operate somewhat in secrecy. I wouldn't be surprised if there are people in Ketchikan that unknowingly send off their donation checks to the very companies that have ruined their town, not knowing that it was those companies. And so this bill is going to shed a little bit of light on the thing. People need to know who it is that is standing against troopers and schools and money for the, you know, to develop for economic development and roads and bridges and hospitals. It is these groups. People don't know it's these groups. They need to know so that we know who we're fighting and that we can stop sending off checks to those very people that are ruining our state.
Good point.
Senator Davis.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think in relation to Representative Martin's concern, maybe there are other organizations, nonprofit organizations or charities that might be this bill might be able to be expanded to, but it's a narrow bill that's relating it to as it's written. I mean, you may have concern with how it's written, with who's included in the 501(c)(3)s and all that, and of course you can expand it to anything you want. But I think the drafter is as it's written, it's addressed to who the drafter wants it to be addressed to. If you want to address it to churches and the Boy Scouts and the Lions Clubs, and then you can expand it to that, I think. So, but I think as it's written, it's geared to where the drafter wants it to be directed.
Representative Martin.
I can guarantee you, sir, having been one that's been with four different organizations over my young life that are 501(c)(3) pure charity organization, you're going to catch all those just to get the greenies. I bet you there's a lot more and I'm not so sure all these 501(c)(3)s, all these organizations here listed, even have a 501(c)(3). They may not even need it. So that's why I'd like to ask the Department of Revenue, who are we catching in this trap? We may be catching the wrong people, and the ones that you're interested in don't even need a 501(c)(3). Just because they're listed under the Department of Commerce and they're nonprofit, that doesn't mean charity. They do not apply to charity. So, if the bill passes, I'll ask for more information so we use it on the floor. But I'm afraid you're going to get a lot of innocent good charities that have been operating for years that suddenly may find themselves in this net when you're not after them.
Are there further questions? My staff did try and track down Mike Monagle. He's at some restaurant in Juneau having dinner somewhere.
Oh, a normal human being?
Oh. Representative Grusendorf?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Perhaps I was a little bit critical in the beginning here on this, but I definitely am lacking information and have the same concerns that Representative Martin has, that apparently this piece of legislation was introduced to get at a certain problem or group and their philosophy on how they feel things should go. But who else are we sweeping up in this net to get at this? And then I still don't know, I don't even know how the members of the Judiciary Committee voted. Not that that's so important, but as a rule, that's kind of a tip-off. If you look at it and you see that some people that you respect and are knowledgeable in the law make a recommendation or a statement, then you start checking what that person is. And, obviously, when you have somebody from the Judiciary Committee who's on the Judiciary Committee with the bill, then you have to even look a little bit careful as you would with any other committee that we have. And I don't know if this is good or bad. I don't know who testified for or against, and it makes it very difficult.
Mr. Chairman, I can certainly appreciate you may want to know who did what to whom. Suffice it to say, without that in front of us, there was at least enough of the Judiciary Committee to pass it. And so that number would certainly suffice, unless you wanted particular individuals. You said you didn't care particularly about the individuals, but you did want to know who voted for and against it. That seems to me contradictory.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, and that goes to, regardless of their political affiliations, you know that there's some people that are very thoughtful on the issue, and you can, track down their statements and maybe even ask questions. And as I indicated, at this time of the year, sometimes pieces of legislation are plopped on your desk and you move it out.
Senator Grusendorf, do you want to share with all of us the information from the committee report?
No. Unless it's required for me to do so in this court.
Freedom of information.
No, Mr. Chairman, it's a mixed bag, but really, at the same time, then we look at the arguments that they made. It's split.
Sure. The previous committee report, the due passes were Representative Rokeberg, Green, and James. The three no recs were Croft, Berkowitz, and Bundy. There were no do not passes and no amends. Are there further questions to come before the committee? I guess I look at this as, if there are groups out there that are influencing or shaping Alaska policy through different means, I think it's legitimate that we know where the funding comes from. It doesn't allow us to stop the funding, but it does allow us to know who out there, and maybe it's who within the state borders even, is funneling money to groups that have, through their organizations, try to shape public policy in the state. And just disclosing that information doesn't strike me as being particularly harmful.
I think you summed it up beautifully, Mr. Chairman, that we go to great lengths to daylight activities within our state, and this just makes more daylight.
Is there a motion, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I would move yes for House Bill number 452, Judiciary Version H, from committee with individual recommendation and accompanying zero fiscal notes.
Is there objection to the motion to move?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Martin.
In being fair to the sponsor, I won't object, but I sure am going to look out Monday as soon as we get a revenue and get a better list of all people that may be swelled up in this net.
Okay. I also will continue to try and get in touch with Mr. Monagle between today's meeting and tomorrow's even. I can get a statement from him and pass that on to the committee. to factor in too, certainly before it comes to the floor. And I would encourage the prime sponsor to have that information, some kind of statement.
We will, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not going to object either, but certainly it's going to affect my recommendation.
Okay.
We will certainly try and get those minutes.
Be helpful.
Okay, with no objection then, the bill will move with individual recommendations and the accompanying zero fiscal note.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
Okay, the only other bill that we have to come before us today is Hospital 463. We have Alfred Elgee here with Department of Administration.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Allison Elgee. I'm the Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Administration. We've been working with the Department of Transportation and the Office of Management and Budget to try to create a methodology to be able to charge rent at the program level to the agencies that occupy state-owned buildings. And this particular bill would create an internal service fund that would allow us to collect those rents and put them into the fund, and then the legislature would subsequently appropriate the money back out of the fund for the operations and maintenance of the state facilities. The advantage to having an internal service fund for this purpose is that the monies would not lapse at the end of the year, and any monies that were appropriated from the fund that were not spent would go back into it. One of the components of rent is a renewal and replacement piece that is collected through the depreciation of facilities, and you collect those things to replace building parts that you don't do on an annual basis, like roof replacement or HVAC systems. So it would provide us an ability to charge on an annual basis with a rent structure that would have a piece like that that we could collect over a period of years and then spend in a capital fashion. And again, those appropriations would all come back through the legislature and have to be appropriated before anything could be spent. We see two real benefits to having a rent structure in place. One is that if the costs are pushed down to the program level, we think people will be much more conscious of the amount of space that they utilize in conducting their operations. And secondly, it provides us an opportunity to increase the amount of money available for maintenance by leveraging some of our other fund sources by charging rent as a direct charge. For instance, in the state office building, we will be collecting money from retirement funds for the space that Retirement and Benefits occupies. In the Alaska office building, some of the federal programs, when rent is billed as a direct charge, will be paying more money to the state than for the maintenance of those facilities. We're working with a consultant that does our statewide indirect cost allocation plan, and he puts together these sorts of proposals. A rent methodology such as this needs to go to the federal government and be approved by the Department of Health and Human Services. And having this fund in place as a part of that plan when we take it forward to the federal government will be kind of the final building block to allow us to make this whole rent proposal work smoothly. We would propose structuring our fiscal year 2000 budget, which starts July 1 of 1999, and that's why the date is included in the bill, with rent for certain select buildings. We're looking at trying to phase this in and not do everything all at once and be overwhelmed.
Right now, you charge those federal programs rent, and that just goes into the general fund?
To the degree that we have federal programs occupying lease space, many of them are being charged for the lease space. To where we've got federal programs occupying state-owned space, the cost is collected through the statewide indirect cost allocation plan, but it ends up being just a percentage, like an overhead percentage. If it was a program cost and billed at the program level so that it was a direct cost instead of an indirect cost of operation, we would be able to collect more money from the federal government.
New money.
New money.
Okay. And so in the Department of Labor, you have a program that's run using a mixture of state matching federal funds. Mm-hmm. You will be able to, will you be able to capture some of that federal fund as a charge to the square footage that that Department of Labor takes up?
Well, not all programs have an unlimited amount of federal funds available to them, so it would depend on whether they were operating with a program that was currently capped under their federal grant. But just as a, for example, child support enforcement, which does operate on a two-thirds, one-third kind of split of costs as approved by the legislature, to the degree that you add costs like this into a program like that, we expand the amount of federal funds that the state is receiving.
Okay, so, but I, so a program that has a capped federal fund, would they be required then to divert a portion of their federal funds away from the program into this, or?
This is one of the policy questions that we've been struggling with. Are actually occupying the space on the basis that we've got money for that. What we have run right up against that question of whether or not we would then ask the federal programs that have capped federal funds to pick up the cost within the federal allocation. And we have not come to a final determination. We're certainly interested in any of the ideas that the legislature has on that basis. As I say, it is still open for discussion.
Are there any questions? Any questions? Is there a fiscal note?
No, sir, there's not.
Zero fiscal note. Well, when I spoke to Anna Lee about this, and actually I had asked for, we have the state equipment fleet fund. Mm-hmm. What are the other examples of things that would operate?
The one that the Department of Administration administers that operates in a very similar fashion is the Information Services Fund, where we charge back all of our computer operations and collect the money, and then it is subsequently appropriated for the operations of the Division of Information Services and for the capital appropriations to replace equipment.
Okay. And has there ever, with operation of those, have there been problems with the money going in, raids on those accounts? One of my concerns is, number one, when the legislature appropriate the money into, and then once the fund builds up, will they just be raiding the account for different things?
Mr. Chairman, we've never had that kind of problem with the Information Services Fund. It's my understanding, working with the consultant, that we need to set up these funds with kind of a life expectancy of the dollars as they are retained by the fund. Our Information Services Fund is set up with a 3-year turnaround so that all the money goes in and comes back out again in a matter of 3 years, and if it doesn't, the legislature chooses not to appropriate it for the purposes it was established, we're required under the federal rules to take the money that's unspent and reduce our charges in the subsequent year. This fund would be set up with those same kind of rules. We would hope for a little longer time frame, but as I recollect, the consultant said that in other states, and there are many, many states that use this kind of an internal service fund operation, that 5 years is about the norm.
For the turnaround of the money?
Yes.
Okay, so on a yearly basis, we will see what in the, will it be in the operating budget or in the capital budget? If you have to do a new roof on the Hess building here, how's that going to be reflected, the money coming out?
Well, you get a mixture. In the operating budget, at the program level, you would see with each program a charge, an amount budgeted for a rental charge that then they would subsequently pay into the fund. You would then see the operation and maintenance costs either in DOT or in the Department of Administration, depending on who's managing the space. And those costs would be appropriated with this public building fund as the fund source. On the capital side, you would have things like the roof replacement, the things that are regular capital projects where you've collected money in this fund. They would be proposed in the capital budget with the public's building fund as the fund source.
Okay. Would that be other or just a flavor of general fund?
It would be other. That is the way our other internal service funds are categorized.
Okay. Are there questions? There are no questions,
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Davis?
Yeah, I have a question, Allison. It appears that, you know, you receive, no, you don't receive, you're receiving these payments, you're not receiving them because it's their interagency. So you're not receiving them, but you're allocating them to the, what are you calling this fund?
The Public Building Fund.
Public Building Fund, which then has two categories, which is operation and then another one, maintenance. Is that how it's?
Yeah.
I'm trying to picture a flow chart of because you it's all GF, but one's going to go to capital budget, and the other's going to go to operating.
Okay, Mr. Chairman. First of all, rent has more than one component. We've got an operation and maintenance component, which are your annual expenditures for utilities and routine maintenance. And then we've got a renewal and replacement component, and we collect in a rent structure for that by depreciating the buildings. And we actually include a component in the rent for depreciation. Am I forgetting a component here? And then a component for the administrative costs. When we put together all of those pieces and look at what it's costing to operate a building, you'll have a rental rate, just as if you were leasing the building, of like $1.10 a square foot. The agency will get a bill for that $1.10 a square foot, and depending on what the agency fund sources are, they'll use those fund sources, and in most cases, you're talking about general fund monies, to pay that bill. And when they pay the bill, they will pay it into the public building fund. Now, at that point, in order for the money to be spent out of the public building fund, the legislature needs to authorize the expenditure of those funds. First expenditure you've authorized is for rent. Then you authorize expenditures for the operations and maintenance, and that will show up in the operating budget. And you authorize expenditures for the capital replacement of building components in the capital budget. And at that point in the process, those expenditures are public building fund expenditures. Does that answer your question?
A bit clearer, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Allison, obvious, this just idea didn't come out of thin air and whatnot. You use some state's model of setting this up because some states do have this. What state in particular did you use to craft this? What I'm saying, it's not a new idea. Many states do it. What was your model?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, if, Representative Grusendorf, Keith's done a good deal of research on this, and if I might, I'd just let him.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Grusendorf, no particular state was used. I think a bill like this was drafted a couple of years ago, just modeling really after the other internal service funds that exist in the state of Alaska. The concept in law really is very simple. It's the implementation of the budget that gets more complicated. But other states have the same concept. I think there's a dozen or more. We've looked at Washington, Oregon, and Utah. In fact, the Deferred Maintenance Task Force, I think, had something in their report which actually talked about a couple states, and they actually, I think, one of the recommendations was creating rent for agencies to pay as a way to stabilize the funding and provide a fund source for deferred maintenance. And I think they actually talked about Tennessee in that report. That's another one. We have at least seen those states' plans and how they work. They're all really very similar. exactly as Allison's saying, that one agency charges the other agency rent, and then those funds are used to for the, both the operation and the capital improvements that are required.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to at least get that it'd be the western states, Washington, Oregon, which we pattern a lot of our stuff after.
Also, Annalee had responded to me in a letter and indicated the only time that they were aware that the state equipment fleet was tapped by the legislature was in the oil crash in the second half of the 80s. At that time, the CBR was not available to cushion the sudden decline. And since the time that time and the establishment of the CBR, there's not been a problem with the legislature trying to raid the funds. So with that, are there any further questions? Seeing none, what's the pleasure of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 463 with individual recommendations and the attached zero.
Is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none, the bill will move. That completes our schedule for today. We are scheduled to meet again tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock. House Bill 344, paternity, child support, non-support. It's my understanding that some changes required by the federal government. And House Bill 432, the Anchorage Airport Revenue Bond Package, will be the first discussion on that. So with that, we'll be...